Now, we're going to begin today with a story that will be sadly familiar to a lot of families and a lot of parents around the country. Rachel Russell is the mother of two children who have a number of additional needs, which you'll hear about shortly. Their access to services and supports throughout their lives has been limited. Well, actually, I suppose it's more accurate to say they've been almost non-existent. I was speaking to her yesterday about her son Alexander and her daughter Michaela.
So Alexander is 15. He has severe ADHD, atypical autism, an intellectual disability, obstructive sleep apnea, severe anxiety disorder, manic disorder, receptive speech delay. I had Alexander at 27 weeks. From the day he's been born, it's been consistently non-stop, like consistently issue after issue after issue.
What kind of supports does he need from you? I mean, how basic are the needs he needs met?
It's just literally when I say it's nearly everything. Alexander is... he's not toilet trained, so he will pass urine into a toilet, but he has poop, say, in a nappy, or in a pull-up, say. And he's at an age now, like he's 15, I'll be 100% honest here, it's not something I want to be doing.
And how's he about it?
God, I'd be honest, he's terrified of a toilet. It's a very, very sensory thing with him. He is terrified of the smell, of touching, of anything around that kind of, he's just terrified of it. Like we're at a stage now where we've kind of built a routine where he, you know, there's a sheet put down on the bed for him to change. He lies on that, he covers himself. And then it's literally like a child. It's like legs up and the same thing then. But he will, like, we're at a stage, like, he wouldn't let anyone else near him.
He relies on you. So is he in school and how does it work?
Well, he's only in school for an hour, probably max an hour and a half a day. And that is mainly due to his anxiety. I will say this much. It's 100% not to the school because they go above and beyond for him.
How far away, do you mind me asking, Rachel, is that from you to the house, from your house to the school?
In distance, I'm not sure. I think it's about 20 kilometres, 20, 25 kilometres, I think. It could be a bit more.
So probably not worth your while going home while he's in for the hour and a half.
Oh, no, I stay there because usually what happens is if he's in school and if there's a change in the routine or if there's something that's not how he knows it to be, he can literally, at the moment's notice, he can just have a huge anxiety attack. And that can result in either lashing out or he will try run out of school or try to get away from whoever he's around. So I stay there to make sure that if that happens, I can just go in, get him and kind of take him out of the environment. Because if not, what happens is the anxiety just goes higher and higher and higher. And then he just, there's no kind of coming down for him for hours.
At home, I mean, he's a 15-year-old boy now. Is he a big fella and what does a meltdown like that look like?
He's huge. He's tall and he's big. So for Alex, what a meltdown starts with first is avoidance. And he just wants everyone away from him at first. Like if he's reached a point where you try and go over to him and he's not able to kind of even regulate or even be open to regulation, he will push, he will hit, he will lash out. Now I will say now it takes a lot to kind of get to that point, but he does still get there if things are too much. And he's strong. He is really strong.
Right. Like have you ever been hurt in any of the interactions with him?
Yeah, I've had 1, 2, 3 teeth broken in half. And they were when he was younger. And no, they weren't, not one part of it was intentional whatsoever. It was mid-meltdown and he would like swing an arm kind of and it would say smack. I've had black eyes, I've had cuts. Even saying that I actually feel horrible. I feel like I'm painting him out to be a monster.
I know, but you're describing a behaviour. It's not him.
Yeah.
It's just something that happens during a meltdown.
Yeah.
And so has he got any therapies? Because obviously, you know, there's a lot going on inside him. It's very difficult for him to express himself. So what kind of therapies have you been able to avail of during his life?
Very, very little. I will say from the time he was two to the time he was six, he was under Cheever's Town House. They were phenomenal. And he got the best early intervention you could ever get. As soon as he started into school, it was all gone. And I mean, everything was gone.
What did he not get?
Okay, so in Cheever's Town, he had weekly OT, weekly psychology. They outsourced TheraPlay. So with Cheever's Town, it was constant. It was constant support, constant therapies that he needed. Whatever the greatest need was, we focused on that, and they would pull on his strengths. From in my experience, they went above and beyond for him. Then when he started in school, nothing. Like, I mean, nothing.
No occupational therapist.
Nothing. Absolutely
no psychologist,
nothing.
No speech therapy.
Nothing. Yeah, nothing. And this wasn't on the school, because the school had consistently been reaching out to try get supports, get services, get everything in. So any kid that went to this school at the time, no services were available at all. Like, nothing. So he went from when he started school up until probably 2 years ago with nothing. Absolutely nothing. Now, that's not nothing, because I would have myself went private. And as much as I possibly could, I was going and trying to get some OT. I was trying to get play therapy. And literally up until that, like, he... from anyone else, he got nothing, absolutely nothing. The first kind of thing he got would have been about a couple of years ago from the CDNT, the Children's Disability Network team. And he got a 6-week block with a psychologist there. And now the psychologist himself was amazing, absolutely amazing. But he's had no OT from them. I've said countless times around his toilet, because I remember reaching out to them a few years ago, and every time I reached out, it was YouTube. Go to YouTube, you might learn some things there.
Would you just, just to be clear about that, who did you approach and who told you to go to YouTube?
Okay. So I'm not sure what the CDNT was called then. I think it was just called the Disability Services. I would have rang numerous times. No one kind of ever getting back to me, telling me there was wait lists, people to be seen. And then kind of in the midst of all that, then my daughter was being diagnosed.
To tell us about your daughter, because Alex isn't the only one with needs in the house.
Yeah, so Michaela is autistic. And she has a diagnosis of autism, ADD, and ARFID. So she's 14. She is what people would look at and say is high functioning, because she's verbal. She actually needs a lot more care than Alex does.
Okay. And you mentioned ARFID there. What is that?
Yeah. So Michaela has, and she's had this from birth, it's almost like an eating disorder. So what it is Michaela, at the moment, all she eats at the moment is dairy milks, 110 gram bars. She won't eat any other size. Won't go near if it's broken, won't touch it. Or a chicken tender meal from Eddie Rockets.
Okay.
So they are the only thing she eats. And what will happen is, so she'll go through a period of a few months eating only them. Then all of a sudden, she'll just stop eating them. She will never, ever eat them again. And she will move on to something else. People would be saying to me, like, don't buy them. She'll eat something if she's hungry. I tried it numerous times. She would just sit there and eat absolutely nothing. Nothing.
And has she got any support? You mentioned that, you know, she needs a lot of support and help. But has she got any? Has there been any on offer?
Lately, I've gotten a little bit more, just because, and it's, I think it's mainly because she got diagnosed recently with scoliosis and kyphosis. And I've gotten physio for that last week. Got physio for that last week for the first time at a postural clinic. Up till then, Michaela has had literally, I'm actually genuinely trying to think, she's had probably a couple of speech and language block of it, speech and language sessions. No OT, no psychology. I don't think she's ever had psychology.
And she's 14, is
14,
she?
14, yeah. The CDNT team at the moment, what they do is they're so overworked and they're so overstretched. They can't even give kids individual therapies properly. What they have to do is they're doing these group therapies. And Michaela's anxiety is so bad. It's nearly as bad as Alex's in the sense that, like, if she goes into a group, she goes in, she sits in the corner, head down, and doesn't engage with anyone. She won't talk to people. She won't even talk to family. Her school are phenomenal in trying to get the supports for her and trying to figure out kind of how to help her. She struggles socially. She struggles every single... all her spare time in school is spent in the sensory corner. It's like a day for her is so overwhelming. So overwhelming.
I mean, where are you in all of this? You say you have to be on standby when Alex is in school.
Yeah.
Michaela needs a lot of support in school as well. I mean, how do you get by? Do you work? Do you work part-time?
No, I can't work. I couldn't work. I can't work at all because both of them would not even stay with anyone. Even when in August last year, I had to go into hospital and I ended up having to discharge myself after a couple of days. They won't stay with people. I think for a long time I've lost myself, completely lost myself. I was very, very blessed. I think a couple of years ago I got an absolute stranger basically funded me to do online counselling for a couple of years. And I think without that, I actually wouldn't like to think where my headspace would have been then, because I had been so down and I hadn't even realised it. Whereas I used to be so outgoing, now I find I've kind of become a bit of a recluse along with it, in a sense then. Do you know that way? Because
I think people listening would hear that you're obviously around your two children all the time.
Yeah.
But it sounds like quite a lonely, isolating existence.
Yeah. Like, and here's the thing, don't get me wrong, because I absolutely adore the kids. Like, I genuinely adore them. And I genuinely believe in a lot of ways they've made me a better person, and I believe they've opened my eyes to a lot of things as well. But it's extremely lonely. It's extremely lonely. It's hard. I have to be honest. I don't think I've actually ever said that, to be honest with you. It is hard. It's hard to feel so alone and so isolated from everyone. God, I'm getting emotional now. It's hard to feel so alone, and it's not through their fault. It's not something that's their fault at all whatsoever. Do you know what I mean? But yeah.
And when you were talking about what Alexander had in Cheeverstown, you know, the therapies he had, the individual care, and his needs were seen, and his strengths, as you said, were seen. How much different would their lives and your life be if there had have been that kind of input in their lives all the way along?
I genuinely from my heart, I really, really believe if that had consistently went on for Alex, it didn't even have to be as much, but if it had just continued on, I think he would be so much more independent. I think if they had gotten the correct supports and continuous supports from when they were younger, I genuinely think we could be a different family. I really do.
And as you say, I'm sure you don't want to be talking to me. I know that you feel conflicted about talking about the level of need your children have and how challenging their behaviour can be, because you clearly love your children.
Yeah.
And yet you've been on this public campaign trail going back nearly a decade now.
Yeah.
I mean, people, if they want to look online, they can see a news story from 2019, and you'd been campaigning at that stage for a year for services.
Yeah. I struggle to understand why, like, say, for example, when a minister is asked, about the services, I struggle to understand why they can't just be upfront with us. the normal answer which they give every single time, which is, oh, well, you know, we opened this many classes, we brought this many SNAs, we done this, we done that. And anything like that that's done, parents are grateful. But the whole thing is, it needs an overhaul. The whole thing needs to be just stopped, scratched and restarted and done properly. And the people that need to be talked to about this are the parents and the families. They're the people that need to be contacted and to be spoken to and to be heard. What they need to do is stop looking at people that have diagnoses and go off people's needs. It may take time and it may take a few years to do. But I know for me, and I know from talking to other parents, we would be happy. We would be okay if we knew that this good, a genuinely good, solid plan that was genuinely going to benefit the kids, genuinely looking at each individual child's needs, was going to be put into place and it was started. But it's not. What happens is they keep throwing these things as, oh, here's a few more SNAs, here's a few more autism classes, but they're not looking at the whole thing. They're not looking at it as a whole. Stop looking at the words and start looking at the needs, because the needs are greater than the words.
And that was Rachel Russell speaking to me earlier. And she has, excuse me, two children, Alexandra and Michaela, that she was speaking about there. Now, listening to that interview where Minister of Children, Disability and Equality, Norma Foley, Sinn Féin's David Cullinan and Ciarán Ahern of the Labour Party. And there's been a number of listeners. We'll bring you some of their comments and we'll get into the debate on some of the issues that were raised after this.
Saturday with Conor Mungon on RTÉ Radio 1.
Fáilte Rath, now we've had a big response to Rachel Russell speaking about her struggles to get services for her two children, Alexander and Michaela. We have Catherine Hove, who's texted into us on WhatsApp, 0870 32 32 32. Horrific to hear another neglected two children and parent. My disabled son experienced the same. It became worse after leaving secondary. Absolutely nothing for disabled adults. I agree we live in an environment of mental and physical cruelty, isolation, grief and trauma. And then a few texts into 51551. How is this poor woman still functioning? Apart from the demands on her day-to-day attending to the needs of her disabled children, the chronic intense stress she endures must be so debilitating. And our government representatives choose to argue and argue about speaking time. Disgraceful, says Mary Clark in Clontarf. That woman's story is thousands of mothers' story in this country with a disabled child, says another texter. I've spent thousands on play therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, psychologists, etc. The HSE and the Department of Education, says this listener, are worse than useless. And then another text in saying, listening to that mother, it makes me even more angry about the bike shed, the wall, the scanner, etc. And the vulnerable old and young, those who care for them left with no support. It's a disgrace. Well spoken, Rachel. And that's the response of listeners to that. Well, now, as I said, on standby listening to that also, where Minister for Children, Disability and Equality, Norma Foley, who's joining us from Tralee, Sinn Féin's health spokesperson, David Cullinan, and Ciarán Ahern of the Labour Party as well. On Tara, Norma Foley, Fáilte go dtí an cláir.
Gurmagad.
You were listening to Rachel Russell there on what life is like to her. She's outlined the services her children are not getting and haven't been getting throughout their lives apart from one short period. I mean, would you accept first off that those two children have been totally failed by the state?
Yeah, I have to say at the outset, I think that's probably one of the most powerful and brutally yet lovingly honest interviews that I have ever heard. And I absolutely accept everything that Rachel has said. I accept, you know, the efforts that she is going to every single day to get the best opportunity for her children. And I absolutely accept that at various points and at this point, there's so many absences of support for her. I absolutely accept that. And look, I've spent, since I've been appointed into this role in the last 6 weeks, I've met so many advocates, disability organisations. I meet people every day in my own constituency office. I absolutely know that the system is not working as it should work. And I, for example, Rachel has been very honest and spoken about that, you know, she's very fulsome in her praise for the schools and what the schools are doing. And look, I would be the first to say that we have come from such a low base taken our schools in terms of provision of class, special education classes, special schools. We've come from a really, really low base and we have made an awful lot of progress there. I can say that, but I can absolutely say it's not enough progress. By no means is it enough progress. Doubling the number of special classes, not enough. We need to do an awful lot more. And I think, you know, Rachel has put her finger on it, and two things I want to specifically reference that she has said. One, she spoke about the therapies not being available in the schools. I've felt from day one that that has been a great weakness in our system. And I was very honoured to be part of the Programme for Government negotiation during my time in education. I really advocated strongly that we would have therapies beginning in our special schools and in our special classes. And I'm pleased to say we've made significant progress in relation to that now. And that will be part of the setup going forward, that therapies will be available in schools beginning with our special schools. The second and very significant point, can I just very quickly make a point that Rachel made, because I agree 100% with her. She has said very eloquently that we need to change our focus here, and a less of a focus on diagnosis and more of a focus on needs. And I just want to say a quick word around that.
Just very
in terms
quickly,
of the assessment
I do want to get
of need.
To the other panels.
Yeah,
the
and I'll
panels
be really quick here.
In, yeah.
The assessment of need process, everybody knows that that process is not working. We have
no,
more
there's
than 14,000
people on the waiting list.
Absolutely. And on average, that process takes 36 hours. It can take up to 96 hours for an assessment for a child. And the child then after that is probably waiting for therapies and everything else. I think that system is wrong. I think that system is broken. I think what we need to do is focus on the need of the child from the very beginning, as Rachel has said. So if the need is speech and language, they get that need. They should not have to wait until after a 36-hour assessment to get access to a therapy, which they might find difficult to get access to. It should be from the beginning. And I am committed to changing that system around assessment of need.
Okay. David Cullen and Sinn Féin's health spokesperson. You've heard Rachel Russell there. I mean, from your point of view listening in, what's your proposal, I suppose, for helping people in her situation?
Well, Rachel told a very powerful story that I've heard from thousands of parents, and I've attended dozens of public meetings attended by parents of children with disabilities. I've heard lots of emotive stories and obviously the experience of parents who are battling to get services for their children. They don't want tea and sympathy from government ministers or from opposition TDs. You heard from Rachel, they want action, they want improvements. And, you know, there is an issue with the assessments of need, but what the minister, of course, hasn't said is that the problem with assessments of need is that it wasn't properly resourced, which means that the guarantee, the legal guarantee that was given to children is not being vindicated because we don't have the staff to do it. And while the minister says, well, children should get access to services as a priority, you heard from Rachel, and I've heard from many parents, the children get neither the assessment or the services, and the whole concept of early intervention has passed them by. I said off air to you, Colm, that 20 years ago I attended a public meeting that was organised by parents of children at that time. The 2005 Act, which gave certain rights, only came into effect. All of the same issues I've heard from Rachel and I'm hearing every day of the week, I heard then. And not much has improved. It goes back to access to special classes in schools. It's access to speech and language therapy, occupational therapy. There are some children who get absolutely nothing. There are children who get some services, but it's only partial. It's patchy. And the big problem here is that we don't have the staff, and we don't have the staff. And I've been saying this and I've been talking about it for 10 years. We're not training enough professionals. We have a shortage of child psychologists, a shortage of speech and language therapists.
Yeah, just on that, I mean, in terms of ramping up the training, you know, there is a certain number of places in the third level system for those specialist therapies like speech and language, occupational therapy, psychologists, etc. Is there a quick way of ramping up the number of places for people and incentivizing people to go into those sectors, in your view? And if so, what is it?
Well, I think when you reach for quick fix solutions, you fall flat on your face very quickly. So So the tragedy here is that we've known for a long number of years, and the experience and the bitter experience of one lady, for example, that I met who was part of that campaign 20 years ago. I met her on the streets of Waterford a couple of weeks ago, and she said to me, David, the issues that we talked about then are the same issues, and I feel so sorry. My child is now a young adult, and I'm looking at all of these children who are struggling. We have to train more professionals, which takes obviously time. That's one of the issues. But we also, and it's going to come up later on, have to recognise that many of the organisations, for example, the CDNTs who provide services, have HSE staff and Section 39 workers who work for charity and voluntary organisations. They're on different rates of pay, higher rates of people who leave. There's retention issues. That's obviously not the way to do it. We have to value the work. We have to value the people who provide the service.
We'll get into a bit more detail on the Section 39 issue.
But I just have to make the point that ministers can't be commentators and simply offering tea and sympathy and then saying that, well, actually we failed with assessments of need. We actually broke the law in relation to a new standard operating procedure, which actually the High Court said was the state breaking the law. So now we're just going to stop the assessments simply because we didn't do our end of the bargain and actually put the resources and the capacity in. We can do both if we have a government committed to delivering for children with disabilities.
I should say that there are more texts coming in from people in similar situations to Rachel Russell, and there is a great deal of anger being expressed. My son is 6 years old. He has Down syndrome and complex medical needs, including the effects of a stroke he had in 2018. He has had one appointment in early intervention in the last 3 years. He needs therapy. Listening to Norma Foley now makes me sick. The rhetoric is empty. Minister, I will let you respond to that, but I do want to get to Ciarán Ahern on this as well. You heard the issues that were raised by Rachel Russell. I take it that there are issues that are familiar to TDs around the country with constituents raising, accessing therapies with them. But listening to Rachel Russell, what would you offer as a solution?
Thanks, Colm. Yeah, I mean, Rachel has outlined just so brilliantly the enormous sort of financial as well as emotional issues that face families as they battle for the services that they need. I mean, obviously, even getting an assessment of need doesn't guarantee services. You've got to keep pushing and pushing. And I mean, there's families in my constituency who are waiting 18 months now for the service statement that is supposed to be received within, I think, a month of getting your assessment of need. And that's what that will outline the services that the state will provide once you have the diagnosis. I mean, it's just one battle after another. Families resorting to the High Court to try and put pressure on the HSE to actually enforce the timelines that they've put in the law. It just isn't good enough. It's something, this was, if anything, a disability election that we just went through, because these issues were raised with us on the doors all the time across the country. It was a completely common theme. So it's absolutely about time that the government does look at this with a sense of urgency as well. And I mean, what David was saying there about the pay and conditions is absolutely vital in terms of retaining people and recruiting people into these services as well. You have CDNT staff who are Section 39. The CDNT is competing with the HSE.
The listeners, that's Children's Disability Network teams. And in the state, there are 93 CDNTs in the state, and close to a third of those CDNTs are run by these Section 39 organisations, which is just a name for a charity or NGO, in effect, which gets health funding under Section 39 of the Health Act. Yeah, sorry, go on.
And just very quickly, and they're only staffed at about 70% of what they're funded. So that's the problem. Even though there is funding for these teams, it's at the moment about 70%. So even if they were fully staffed, that still wouldn't be enough to provide the range of services which are needed.
And on the CDNT, you know, I know Rachel mentioned being referred to YouTube videos. I mean, friends of mine have been called in. They're saying that actually the dads are getting more hours from CDNT than the children that they'd like to be looking after, because CDNT put on these kind of group networking and advice sessions for parents. One of them was called Dads and Darts, and it was bringing parents in to talk about the issues, get some broad advice. And obviously the therapists who are doing this would like to be providing the actual hours to the children. They don't have the capacity to do that, so they're trying to get the parents in en masse and pass some information over to them. But obviously that is just not good enough, and it's putting the cart before the horse. Parents are unbelievably frustrated.
As we heard, Minister, in that text, so I mean, when you hear Rachel Russell and Ciarán O'Hearn's constituents talking about being referred to YouTube on this, what do you say to that?
Oh yeah, and I'd be the first to say that's not at all acceptable. And I want to be very clear. You know, David has referenced, you know, ministers providing tea and sympathy and you know, being bystanders here. I wouldn't insult anybody by offering tea and sympathy. This is a lived experience. I have been really, really clear to say that so many aspects of the system is not working. I'm really, really focused on trying to do it better, to change where it's not working. I've never been a bystander in my life. You know, when I came into education, we had very, very few special classes. We now, in my time, doubled those classes. And right. By September of this year,
I know, but you've said the system is not delivering. And during the week, sorry to interrupt you, the Taoiseach said the system is not delivering. But the system is made up of entities that are under government departments, atop of which sits a minister. Agreed. In a government. And you and your party have been a member of government now for 5 years. So why is the system that you have been overseeing not delivering?
Well, just for example, within that system, we have, and reference has been made to the assessment of need process. Now, that's a legal process that is in place, and that has been up and running. I don't believe that system of assessment of need, and this is my perspective as the current minister, I don't believe that system is working. And I will go back to what Rachel has said there.
Well, it's not a matter of subjective belief. There's 14,000 people waiting for an assessment of need. There are now even waiting lists in the private sector.
Yeah. And well, I tell you, one of the issues that we have here within that system of assessment of need, minimum of roughly 36 hours are given over to assessment. It can actually go to as far as 96 hours. And all along the way, the child is not getting any needs-based therapy. And secondly, we'll say our therapists are spending one third of their time either on assessment or administration or whatever the case might be, rather than actually delivering the therapy.
I know, but the therapy has to be delivered. You said you agreed with Rachel Russell.
100%.
At the end of the intro, and you said it has to be based on need rather than diagnosis. Now, surely a comprehensive assessment of need is needed to identify that, so therapies can be tailored to the individual child.
No, I don't actually necessarily agree with that. I think from the
outset...
But
what should it be based on if it's not based on the needs of the child?
But obviously, that's my whole point. It should be based on the need, not necessarily the diagnosis.
Okay,
the diagnosis
But if the therapists aren't engaging in assessments of need, how do they establish what the need of the child is?
But there can be an immediate assessment as distinct to the 36-hour or the 96-hour assessment that is currently required under law. There can be an immediate assessment that perhaps in the first instance identifies a speech and language issue or whatever. If the child were in my classroom, my focus every day with the child in the classroom is, what is the need of that child? What can I do to ameliorate the need of that child? I'm not interested. I don't need to know the diagnosis. I need to know the need.
I know, but with respect,
we
heard from a parent there, Rachel Russell, who talked about the time that was spent with her son Alexander when he was in the Cheeverstown services, and the time that was spent with him informed the future therapies and the additional therapies he would need. I mean, at the outset, is it not worthwhile spending time to establish the need of a child to come up with a programme of therapies?
And again, I'm not disagreeing with that. I said we spend our time focused on need, not necessarily the diagnosis. The diagnosis journey might take an awful lot longer. It might take many, many more hours. But the initial assessment should be able to identify the initial need.
Right.
And that's where I think the assessment of need process as it's currently laid out is actually causing problems.
Okay.
We need to address the assessment of need process.
David Cullinan.
Colm, I published last week a parliamentary question response which showed that community waiting lists had increased over the last 5 years by 60%. It's now 260,000 people right across all primary and community care waiting lists. Many of those are children waiting to get first assessment to a children's disability network team. So we have tens of thousands of children who had no assessment but are still waiting even for an initial appointment to see a CDNT. You can't diagnose a child or establish the full health and education needs of a child with complex disabilities in 30 minutes. The government tried to do that. They had a new standard operating procedure in place. It was seen as a yellow pack assessment of need. It went before the High Court and the High Court struck it out. The logic of the 2005 Act when it was first enacted was that each child would have a proper assessment. That would establish the health and the educational needs of all of those children. At the end of the year, an aggregate report would be given to each of the ministers to establish what's the service need here? How many speech and language therapists we need? How many occupational therapists? What we have at the moment is the minister trying to roll back on a commitment that was given in 2005 because they failed. Children who are not getting access to services, none whatsoever in many cases, heartbreaking stories from parent after parent after parent. And I'm sorry, but they do see it as teen sympathy because it isn't a new issue. It isn't something that arose last year or even 5 years ago. You can talk to many parents of children who now have adults who went through exactly the same process, who were promised early assessments, and the early assessments and early interventions never happened. They passed their children by. And they're watching on in horror as now more families go through the same heartbreaking experience. So we have to do more. We have to resource the services. We have to hire the staff. We have to pay them what's needed to get them in the first place.
You're saying that what was the 36 or in excess of 90 hours assessment of need are needed?
Well, I think you can provide some services very quickly and very fast. I'm not saying that you have to wait an assessment for all services to be provided, but the assessment is an important part to look at all of the holistic needs of the child, because there's health needs, there's educational needs, you heard as well eating disorder issues, maybe mental health issues. So if you want a proper assessment, you have to then work, those teams have to work with the child. And the problem is that they're getting neither. So if there was some logic and Norma's argument, children would be getting at least those initial services.
Okay, right.
That's not happening. So they're getting neither the assessment.
Right, if I could just clarify let you respond to that.
Yeah, if I could just clarify, that is my point. Children are not getting any supports or any therapies as they go through the diagnosis process. They're not getting it until the end of the 36 hours or the 96 hours or whatever. And then, even then, it's challenged. I believe that they should be getting it on the basis of their needs as those needs are identified.
Okay.
I fundamentally believe that. It's about ensuring that children, as early as possible, get the supports that they need. And in terms of the CDNTs, I absolutely accept it's been referenced that, you know, the lack of staff. It's not through lack of funding or resourcing. Like, I can say that there was additional staff going into the CDNTs, 272 in the last year. Not enough. We still have vacancies. So therefore,
do you know the level of vacancy in the CDNTs is? Because in a census and workforce review for 2023 to 2026, it said the average vacancy rate nationally is 36%. The staffing vacancies in children's disability network teams have a national average vacancy rate of 34%, said the roadmap for service improvement. The roadmap for service improvement said it was 34%. The census and workforce review said it was 36%. That was they're from 2023. But Hildegard Nocte, the minister in your department, the junior minister in your department, said that the CDNT vacancy rate in the same year was 29%. So, you know, there seems to be conflicting figures around the same year. So is it known what the vacancy rate is?
Well, it is. It's my understanding that it's in the high 20%. But I'd have to say to you, on the other side of that, they would say that there has been a 17% increase in 2024. But that's not the issue. What is the issue is that we don't have enough therapists in the system. Like, the government has provided the funding, but we just don't have the pipeline. So I have met with Minister Lawless and indeed Minister Carol McNeill as well.
That's the Minister for Further and Higher Education and the Minister for Health. Yeah, sorry.
The Minister for Further and Higher and the Minister for Health, yeah. So the additional places, and there will be an increase in places across all that number of disciplines.
But where are you going to get them? Because if the HSE CDNTs are recruiting in the country, isn't it possible that there will be people in Section 39 organisations who will just migrate to better paying conditions into HSE jobs? It's the additional people and getting them into the system is the more difficult piece.
Well, there's two things about that. First, we need to get the additional people trained up. So Minister Lawless, further and higher, Minister Lawless has committed to increasing places. That's also in the programme for government in disciplines, whether it's speech and language, occupation therapy, physical therapy, whatever the therapy might be. We've equally committed to upskilling courses, those who are currently in a profession, whether it's nursing or whatever, who might want to upskill and into the process. There's also apprenticeship type schemes being proposed by government. So that's just in terms of the staffing end of it. But there is no doubt that there is a strong body of work also required. I absolutely accept the points that have been made around Section 39. I have to say to you that that's currently at the WRC. I know there is a huge commitment from everybody who is sitting around the table at the WRC to address the issue around the paying conditions for Section 39.
Those talks are resuming on Monday. And for anybody who's not aware, there's a disparity between people in Section 39 organisations who provide services to children with disabilities in their pay and people who are directly employed by the HSE or in Section 38 organisations that have public sector pay scales. Ciarán Ahern, on the staffing, the CDNTs, the resourcing of them, what's your view as to the solution to recruit people?
Well, look, obviously increasing course places for things like this is a longer term solution. I'd like to see a concerted recruitment drive, potentially from abroad, potentially bringing back maybe some of our own graduates who've left abroad and incentivizing them to return home. I mean, this is a matter of urgency. There are limited windows for children to get the services that they need here, particularly speech and language therapy, occupational therapy. So this isn't something that we can wait for or that families can wait for any longer. This is an urgent thing that we need to see. I mean, the recruitment freeze is still having an effect, actually, even on recruitment in my own area. Basically, the local primary care centre in my area has gone from 5 speech and language therapists down to half a full-time person at the moment. I believe they're trying to recruit one more, but because the staff levels were repressed into 2023 with that recruitment freeze, that has lowered the base numbers that they're allowed to recruit. And if they want to recruit any more SLT, so a number of people left during 2023. This is in Dublin Southwest. That if they want to recruit any more speech and language therapists now, they have to lose roles from somewhere else within that organisation.
Okay, I'm going to go back to some of what the listeners are saying here. Pat Mulligan on WhatsApp says, therapy for children with special needs is a joke. My two children have been linked with CDNT for years. All we get is laminated handouts, no OT or speech and language therapy directly with the children. That mother's story echoes so many. Mary Collins on WhatsApp as well says, as principal of a special school for physical disabilities for 10 years, the therapies have reduced significantly since the CDNTs were introduced. And there is another text in 51551. My 13-year-old autistic child is officially in receipt of services from the CDNT and the Child and Adolescent Mental Health Services. The reality is there's no services. These clinicians either just write reports or prescribe medication, no actual therapeutic service or help for families. But Norma Foley, the Taoiseach has committed to putting this at the heart of cabinet business. He says there is going to be a committee set up that will drive forward work in this area. And he said about it, I am engaging with ministers and officials to fully tease out the programme of work for the unit to establish how it can best add value and impetus to the disability agenda. Does that sound
that's
urgent?
That's absolutely correct. Well, it is so urgent, in fact, that the Taoiseach has already held those meetings with all ministers across the table. A dedicated meeting to the issue of disability. Minister Hildegard Nocton and I were very central to that, obviously, but it's across government. So the Minister for Transport was there, the Minister for Health, the Minister for Social Protection, a cross-departmental approach to address the issues of disability right across society. The Taoiseach,
did that as a matter of priority. What about consultation with parents and families? I mean, parents have to learn off other parents. There are parents who say that the best source of information information in dealing with the challenges they encounter from services are other parents. Could they not be consulted in a formal way for any group that's going to drive forward policy on the area of disability?
100%, I'd have to say the Taoiseach has also for the first time committed to setting up within his own office of the Taoiseach a unit that will deal specifically with the issues of disability. He has also been very clear that there will be outside expertise brought in relation to that. And just in terms of
but
you know,
at the moment the Taoiseach
that,
in that remark he said they're teasing out the programme of work for that unit. I mean, this is, you know, as I said at the outset, you're 5 years you're 5 years in government already. I mean, how has this not been done before, and how is this work not further along?
To be fair, the Taoiseach, when he was previously Taoiseach, Micheál Martin, did set up a cabinet subcommittee dedicated to children, education and disability. But he has gone a step further this time because we recognise that more needs to be done in this space. He has set up a unit within the department of the Taoiseach. Okay. I think the first time, never before, has that been done. That sense of priority and that sense of personal commitment given by the Taoiseach to address across all of government issues around disability.
Okay,
and within the first 6 weeks, one of the first meetings he held was in relation to disability, where he all ministers and made them accountable for delivering on the issue
and you have
of disability.
Said that. We are going to go to a break, but in a word, this issue of pay parity for Section 39 workers, do you agree with it?
Well, I'd have to say to you, look, this is currently before the WRC. My officials are engaging very proactively there, as indeed are union representatives. And I think I should allow the process to continue. They're reconvening again on Monday. And I think everyone around the table is committed to doing what's necessary to address the issues that are there.
Well, the manifesto support Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael committed to it. But like lots of other issues, what they said during the course of the election campaign and what they're saying now are two different things. Of course there should be pay parity. It makes no sense whatsoever if you have a children's disability network team where you have therapists doing exactly the same work in exactly the same team on different rates of pay with no pension entitlements. Makes absolutely no sense to anybody who would agree with fairness. So even the fact that the minister simply couldn't say yes, I think speaks volumes.
Okay, Ciarán Ahern.
Yeah, we fully support
the minister. I cannot comment on something that is currently before the WRC other than to say, and David, you're not sitting at the WRC, so you're not aware of what's been transposed there by officials within my department and indeed with the unions.
It's so in the WRC because the government didn't deal with it because there's a protracted row between government
the
and the Section
39
workers.
The WRC should be allowed to proceed without interference from anyone
on
the outside.
You agreed with pay parity before the election, did you?
I have no issue whatsoever. I have said I want the fairest possible outcome for everybody who is providing services, within the disability sector.
Right,
I honour and respect the WRC as the mechanism to achieve that.
Just as a matter of logic, you know, our CDNT in Dublin South West or in my area needs psychologists, can't get them because they're taking HSE jobs. The Section 39 organisations are competing with the HSE for staff, and that just doesn't make sense.
Okay, we got to take a break. We're back in a minute.
Well, we should allow the process of WRC to continue.
Saturday with Conor Mungon on RTE Radio 1.